Hi, I'm Greg Lefebvre, creator and host of the Compulsive Storyteller podcast. Welcome to another segment of Pass the Mic, where once or twice a month, we invite a talented guest with a great story to join us on the pod to tell their story and or to chat with me about the art of storytelling. There's a great new podcast from Consequence Media, The Spark Parade. Every week, host Adam Unz chats with artists and entertainers about their spark, the artwork that shaped their life and career, whether it's music, books, video games, or any other kind of art. By talking about the things they love, they share insights into what drives their work and style. Join Adam every Wednesday as he explores cultural inspirations with people like Chris Gethard, Bob the Drag Queen, Connor Oberst, David Bory, John Lovett, and Helen Hong. Listen to The Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts. I'm excited to introduce today's guest, Ophira Eisenberg, a stand-up comic, writer, and host of the podcast Parenting is a Joke from iHeart. She's also hosted NPR's Ask Me Another for 9 years. She's a regular teller and host on The Moth, and her stories have appeared on their award-winning radio show and podcast, plus their best-selling books. You can also stream her stand-up special, Plant-Based Jokes, on YouTube.
So when I was a young woman, I was actually only 16 years old. I was interested in sex. I was a girl who wanted a boyfriend, never a horse, always a boyfriend, just to be clear. And I had two older sisters, and they convinced me that I should lose my virginity to just whomever, like get it over with as fast as possible, mm-hmm. because in the future there would be better sex once I knew what I was doing. So not to get all like, you know, hell bent on my first time being this magical romantic thing that was probably not going to be great. And so just get it over with,
that's a reasonable plan.
I remember telling this though to all of my friends in high school, my girlfriends, and they thought that was pretty advanced. I think they thought that it should be a little bit more special than just get it over with whoever you can, except for my one friend Cheryl. And not because Cheryl and I were on the same wavelength. Cheryl was just, I think she had like an imperial scientific mind. She later did become someone who excelled in science. And I just think what I was talking about from a point of view of numbers and experiences made a lot of sense to her. So we concocted a plan, I guess, as much as you can concoct a plan about something in the future that you have no control over, which is we decided that we would hang out and do things where we might be in a situation to meet guys. And if it were the situation where we met some guys that seemed like the right candidates for us to lose our virginity to, we would give each other a code phrase to indicate that. And this is very dorky, but our code phrase was expand your horizons. So if we were out in the bars, and we were at 16 because Canada drinking age is 18, which means that you go to the bars at 16 if you are people like me and my friends. So if we were at bars and we saw someone we liked and, you know, things were progressing a certain way, we'd find each other's eyes and say, expand your horizons.
Why is this expand your horizons dorky?
I think it's dorky.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I think it's like sort of nerdy.
Maybe I'm dorky then too. Go ahead.
Now, I was in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And so for spring break, you know, I guess some kids maybe went to California. But the main place, what to do with spring break in Calgary was actually to go skiing. And Banff is right nearby, the Rocky Mountains. So Cheryl and I decided for spring break, when we were 16, that we were going to borrow her mom's car and drive to Banff and hang out for a couple days and not ski, just hang out, do like just walk around, hike, you know, maybe meet some guys, honestly. And so we borrowed her mother's car. It is amazing to me looking back that my mother and her mother let us do this alone.
And did they know the whole mission?
They had no idea of the mission.
Okay.
But we were two young you know, we were two teenagers, but we had good, we had good grades. We appeared very responsible. My mother was a newly single mom, and I think was just happy for me to do something that I liked. And her mom was a single mom, and I honestly believe that is part of the reason why we were allowed to just hop in a car at 16, drive an hour and a half out of town, and not come back for a couple of days. It stayed in a motel. Like, we stayed in a motel.
Right.
Now I feel like this is unheard of. So we...
Oh, it is, but it is unheard of today.
Yeah.
You know, there's such a saturation of terrible stories about things that happen to girls alone that, you know, nobody will do that. Well, no mother will allow, no responsible mother will allow that. Yep.
There's no way. I don't even know if we would be able to to check into a motel. Anyways, so I was really excited about this. So was she. We did stay. We paid with it with our own money. We both had jobs. We were really responsible. And so we stayed at a pretty, you know, budget motel, but it was fine. And we got dressed up and we hit there was a strip. Now Banff is totally built up, but at the time there was a strip where there were bars and restaurants, and that was your choosing. So we hit the strip and we went into the first bar, you know, some couple guys were like, hey girls, come on in here, and that seemed like a good enough invitation. So we went into this bar, no problem with ID or anything. We sat at this bar and ordered probably rum and cokes. We decided upon fake names because we didn't want to, I don't know, deal with that. This is before anyone could look us up on the on their phone, but still we decided on fake names. Also, my name is so weird, Ophira Eisenberg, that it always felt like it just stuck out. So we decided to do the thing where she and I would take our middle names and our mother's maiden names to create our new names. So my friend Cheryl became Lynn Hollingshead, and I became Jasmine von Brunswick. I know my fake name is actually weirder than my real name. It's hard to believe. Yeah,
close.
So Jasmine and Lynn are at the bar and we're talking to these guys, and they're very nice and what have you. And they are flirting and they are buying us our rum and cokes. And they say that they are both pilots. They are pilots. And Cheryl, being the smart one, mouths to me that, you know what that means? They're clean. You know, like you have to pass medical tests all the time to be a pilot. I'm like, oh, she's working on this. And things are progressing and we're flirting and I'm looking at her and she's looking at me, and then they, you know, we've had a couple drinks and they go, hey, do you guys want to come back to our hotel room and have another drink? And I look at Cheryl with a glint in my eye and she returns the glint, and I say, yeah, let's do it. So we walk over to their hotel, which is many stars nicer than our hotel, many stars. And we go in and, you know, they are sharing a hotel room, however. And so there is one main room and a bathroom, and they pour us a drink and we're starting talking and chatting and what have you. Little verbal foreplay, I believe. And then Lynn starts kissing one of the guys. And so I catch her eye while she's kissing him in a pause, and I go, expand your horizon. And she gives me the nod and I'm like, okay, I guess we're doing this. So the only other, you know, we're not going to stay in the main room. So the only other place to go was the bathroom, which seemed obvious to everybody. So the guy that was designated my guy dragged me into the bathroom, not against my will, with my consent. And we started making out. And then, you know, things were progressing and the clothes were starting to come off. Now, it took a long time for my clothes to come off because this was the late 80s. So I had clothing with a lot of snaps and zippers and grommets. So it took a long time of hooks and snaps and grommets and zippers for everything to come off. But I was mostly undressed and we were going at it. And then I got to tell you, all of a sudden I was like, what? As he hoisted me onto the sink of the hotel bathroom. So my legs were dangling off. And he said, do you want to do this? And I asked him if he had a condom. See, how smart was I at 16? Which he did. And he put it on. And I lost my virginity. And let me tell you something. I have nothing to say about the quality of the situation. It was pretty much how my older sisters had described it. Short, not memorable. Matter of fact, I wasn't even sure when it was over. I was like, huh? All right, because I didn't feel much of anything. And then other than, you know, pressure, I suppose. And then it was over. And then he looked at me and I think he could see on my face the fact that I had realized that I just crossed a big moment in my life. And he looked at me and he said, Jasmine, are you sure you're 18? And I just nodded, yeah. We fell asleep kind of on his a pile of our clothes on the hotel bathroom floor. And then the sun was coming up and I got up and got dressed. And Cheryl was, I peeked in the other room and she was lying on the bed and getting, at she was awake though. And she got dressed and they offered to go get us coffee. And we said, no, that's fine. And we took the short walk of shame out of their hotel down the gravel road back to our motel. And I was just brimming with excitement. And I just wanted to talk all about it. You know, what it was like for her, what it was like for me, and what did she think? And I, you know, we got a little further down the road and I just was like, Cheryl, like expand your horizons. How was it? And she was like, what are you talking about? I'm like, what do you mean? What am I talking about? And she's like, well, we didn't do anything. We just made out a bunch. And I was like, what do you, I said, expand your horizons. And you gave me the nod. And she said, oh no, I thought you said, are you okay? And I was like, how did this, and she goes, did you? And I was like, yes, I did. And she was like, how was it? And I was like, it was, I did it. Okay. And she got quiet and I got quiet. And I couldn't believe that I'd actually duped myself. But it was done. I had single-handedly expanded my horizons. And the whole world was open to me of better sex on the path towards that horizon. Because let me tell you something, the bar was low. It was only up from there, my friends. And I will, just as a little coda to this, you know, I'm still friends with Cheryl this many years later. And not that long ago, I brought up the story to her. And I was like, do you remember when we spent time in Banff and I lost my, we made this thing and you didn't uphold your side of the bargain and I lost my virginity, but you didn't? And she was like, what? And she remembered the trip to Banff and she remembered some bits of it, but she didn't remember that part. And I think that is so funny. Because we are all the stars of our own stories, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. But it's interesting that she didn't remember because it wasn't, she didn't lose her virginity.
She didn't lose her virginity. Yeah, it was just another day on a spring break vacation with a friend.
Right.
So, yeah.
Cool. Well, first of all, I've changed the names and other identifying elements in this story just because the person is still around and I've had no contact with since all this transpired. So I've made some changes. So I was 15, which is interesting because you were 16. And my family palled around with a family that lived up the block, like we were inseparable.
Okay.
We vacationed together. We did weekends together. We shared all the holidays. And the father of the house, his name was Jim Sr. and the mother was Nancy. And their son was Jim Jr. and their daughter was Sandy. And my parents' names were Bill and Betty. I don't know why I'm giving you all this, but all these names kind of get featured in the story. And I had two sisters, one of whom was the best friends with Sandy. And Sandy, I secretly and overwhelmingly was in love with. And she felt the same about me. So all this sounds idyllic, except that their dad, Jim Sr., was an award-winning salesman for a big corporation, was a mean-spirited alcoholic who could even be violent at times. On top of his dresser, he kept a bayonet, which supposedly had the dried blood of a Nazi he'd killed in World War II.
Oh my goodness.
So he was a creepy guy, yeah. So he also drove too fast in a flashy car, a late model convertible. And if that wasn't enough, he was also a terrible womanizer. So sometimes he would bring his conquests back to my family, his family's home, which would cause a terrible row between he and his wife, Nancy, obviously. And my mother would have to go up the block and sort of talk her off the ledge, so to speak. So my relationship with Sandy started out with, we just made out. I mean, we found places in both our houses to lose ourselves in kissing, both in the attic, both basements, front hall bathroom, where we could make an exit to the front doorway if we needed to the front yard. But we had two favorite spots. The first one was under her brother's Lionel train set, which was set up on a high table and had a curtain all around the bottom edge from the table's edge. And we moved around all the basement junk that was stored underneath there. We put together a couple of cushions and a pillow, and we created a comfy little lair for ourselves to make out in. So here's an example of sort of how her dad dealt with things. Underneath the table, there were also stored a bunch of glass bottles, you know, returns. And they were sort of set up like bowling pins. And one day we were going at it, having a good time, and he came home unexpectedly mid-afternoon, and Sandy went up to greet him, and she turned out the lights in the basement, headed upstairs. And then I knocked over some bottles in the darkened basement, and he got one of his guns that he kept stashed around the house in various places and headed down the cellar stairs. And Sandy saved the day. She said, Dad, it was just a cat. I was just down there with Momo. And he hesitated, and then he went back upstairs. And my heart was like, you know, beating out of my chest. I mean, I literally, after he went back upstairs, I could hear my heart beating in my ears. So the other place we tried making out, but it would only work in the summertime, was my tree fort. And it worked out for us, like I said, only in the warm months. And what's funny is at the bottom of the tree for my tree fort, there was a sign nailed, no girls allowed. But I guess young love conquers all, so I made an exception for Sandy. And my mom and Sandy, they were best buddies, and they hatched up a bunch of small businesses together. Their first was starting to resell melted like beer bottle ashtrays, where they had the sports team's logos placed. And then they moved on to a do-it-yourself Christmas wreath, which they made with pine cones and chestnuts and acorns and holly. And they drilled holes in everything so that the person who bought the wreath could assemble it. And they had great fun on there. They would go to New York trying to find places to buy these things. And they finally got an audience at Bloomingdale's. And Bloomingdale's gave them a huge order for these do-it-yourself Christmas wreaths, except they had no manufacturing capability, so they had to hire a couple Boy Scout, Girl Scout troops, everybody else, including all their kids, to comb the woods for nuts. And then the following year, they really lucked out, and they were better organized. They got an order for Bloomingdale for 2,000 Christmas pomander balls. And a pomander, do you know the word pomander ball?
I don't.
So a pomander ball consists of oranges pierced with cloves, which they decorated with plastic flowers and a ribbon. And you hang it in your closet. And as the fruit dries, it releases a lovely fragrance. And they were making them at Sandy's house, and they had 1,000 pomander balls inside the house, and the fragrance was beyond overwhelming. So one night, Nancy called my mother, screaming that Jim Sr. had gone totally crazy, and in a fit of anger had smashed the living room window and was throwing all their pomander balls out onto the front lawn. And the police arrived, and everything only returned to normal when they agreed they would rent a storage unit for their products, which they did. So Sandy and my relationship had now reached the point where we wanted to finally lose our virginities together. And we had enough humping and bumping and touching and feeling. And we planned all the details for months. But why did it take months? And I think it took months because we were both, first of all, it was a frigid January, but we were also maybe not sure we really wanted to do it. Nancy and Jim Jr. had gone away for the weekend, and Jim Sr. would be out of the house on a Saturday night, so that was our window of opportunity. And Sandy had a second-floor bedroom, which always smelled good because she had a pomander ball in her closet, and she slept in a four-poster bed with a frilly canopy top, much like her mother's sort of plastic flower taste. And we started by pushing the bed in front of the window, so if Jim Sr. showed up unexpectedly, we'd have some warning. And then we turned the lights down low, and we shyly stood by the bed and undressed each other. And she turned up the heat so it wasn't cold. And we originally decided to use Glad Wrap as a condom. But then...
no, that does not work.
Yeah, on the last day before the event, I decided to sprinkle some real condoms, which I did. And once we were naked, I helped Sandy into bed, and then I put on my condom and awkwardly climbed on top of her. And within like 3 seconds, sadly, I ejaculated and it was over. And at that moment, her dad came speeding into the driveway. I mean, like, we had no time. And he was, before you know, he was climbing the stairs to the second floor. His bedroom was up there, too. And I jumped out of the bed, and I gathered up all my clothes, still completely naked, and quickly climbed out the window and then flattened myself against the wall on the left side of the window. And the window was open. So when I can hear what's being said inside. And he's saying, you know, what's the window doing open? Don't you know heat costs money? And I'm just, God, please don't stick your head out the window. And then he does stick his head out the window, but he looks right, not left, and doesn't see me. Then he closes the window. I'm like, whew, damn. And all I could think about was that bayonet on his dresser in the next room. So a moment after the window was closed, I waited for a few minutes, and then I attempted to put on my clothes. But this is a very steep roof. It was above their downstairs den. And I just lost my balance. I slid down the roof, dropped down under some snow-covered bushes, and all that came down with me was my underpants and 2 socks. And I wasn't cut up too bad. I mean, I was bleeding, but I had some cuts, but they weren't deep penetrations. And so I hobbled through all the backyards, back houses, you know, with my socks and underpants on, and got to my parents' side door. I tried to quietly enter, and my mom immediately opened the side door, and I said, "Mom, don't ask." And the difference between, you know, a boy's mother and a girl's mother is she just rolled her eyes and shook her head and left me in the hallway. Back up the street, after her father had left, Sandy used a broomstick to fish the rest of my clothes off the roof. And then she came down to see if I was hurt, you know, maybe unconscious in the bushes, which, of course, I was not. So that was the comic, tragic beginning of our sex life, which lasted throughout the rest of grade school and throughout high school. And the crazy thing is that we never got caught. Year after year, close call after close call, none of our parents knew a thing, which is truly astounding. They were so myopic. And so as a coda, in my case, my sister did find out and was always disappointed in my behavior. And after a couple dates in college, Sandy and I never saw each other again. And throughout my life, I just kind of wanted to apologize to her. For a number of reasons. But my sister always said to me the exact same thing. She said, "Greg, she's moved on, and now she has a family and kids, and she doesn't need to be reminded of all that stuff way back then, and you're just doing this so you don't feel guilty." So I've never bothered contacting her and followed my sister's advice. I would love to get her take at her age on all that transpired back then, but I guess I'll never know. So there you have it.
Oh, that's great. I think she would welcome. I mean, at this point in our life, do you think if someone got in contact with you, you would be like, "Sure, let's talk about it." Don't you think?
Well, yeah, I do. But I'm not, you know, I have to think about it. I mean, if I was her, I was really pushy. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, she was completely on board. But I just don't feel good about the whole thing. Mm. And I would love to have the chance to apologize, which I guess I will not have. So.
Maybe she'll listen to the podcast.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe that's how I can resume contact. So
there you go.
Well, listen, this has been great fun. I thoroughly enjoyed your story.
My pleasure. Oh, yeah, back at you. I love the details of it. I was like in a totally different world. And we had those things in our closet, or someone did, because I know exactly what you're talking about, but I had no idea what they were called.
Yeah. Great.
Okay, great.
So look, talk soon.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thanks a million. Are you ready to tell your own story on The Compulsive Storyteller? We're launching a new segment of guest storytelling, and we want to hear your stories. Email a voice recording to hello@thecompulsivestoryteller.com. I'll play selected stories on upcoming episodes. Try to be as clear as possible in your recording, and we reserve the right to lightly edit them for length and clarity. Leave your name or contact information in your voicemail or email, and let us know if you'd like the story to be anonymous. I can't wait to hear from you. The Compulsive Storyteller is now co-produced by Greg Lefebvre and Fadia Monserrat, who's also arranged the music and created the special effects. Emily Ramon does design, research, editing, and marketing. Peter Kakoma has made our theme music and for many seasons co-produced the show with me. If you enjoyed this week's episode, let us know. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Compulsive Storyteller, and we'd love to hear from you. This podcast is independently produced, so we really appreciate all your help and support. Share the show with your friends, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave a review. You can also check out our website, thecompulsivestoryteller.com, for more information. Thanks for listening, and if you didn't like this one, the next one will be another story. All characters and events portrayed in this podcast are based on my truth, with some names and facts changed for privacy. The conversations and dialogues are based on my best memory, but are not word-for-word recreations.